This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Oh boy, do I have a book for you today. It's called Trigger Point, and the author has really impressed me with the work that he's done with this book and with his website. As you all know, I start this program with this catchphrase for writers and those who dream of writing. And so many of you during the pandemic finally decided to start writing. So I am so happy to welcome to the program Tony Roth. Hi, Tony.
Hi, Deb. Sorry, Cassie. So good to meet you and so good to be on the show.
Well, you know, this is what I do all the time. Tell people, you've got a book in you, sit down and write it. And, of course, the pandemic did open some opportunities. So tell us about how I know that you had been thinking about the basic plot for Trigger Point for a long time. How did you finally decide to sit down and write it?
Well, I think the trigger point, if you will, for me to become a first-time novelist was a series of events leading into the pandemic. I challenged my son, who's a senior in college, to do a life plan. He turned it around on me and said, "Dad, you need to have one of these. Isn't there things you want to still do?" And I said, "Yes, there is." So I put down the idea that I'm going to put pen to paper, fingers to keyboard, and write this book. That was in November, right before the spring of the COVID breakout pandemic. And when that happened, I stopped traveling for about 3 or 4 months there. And I am a constant traveler for my entrepreneurial ventures. And I started talking with my friends. They said, "You need to take this moment and write that book. All of these stories that we've been telling for decades, There's a story in this and a character that we can create." I did it in about 90 days, Patsy, and I wrote literally 113,000 words of mostly, I'm told, narrative by my preliminary editors. But at least I got the story on paper, and then I began to seek out some professional guidance and even some educators on how to improve the dialogue, how to do a better character line, how to really affect the three-act structure and, you know, let the characters develop over time. And I think we turned it into a great book and hopefully a tremendous series.
Well, I think you did too. And that's what I love. I always tell people, get the words down. Don't worry. Sometimes people will say, "Well, I don't even have a computer." I said, forget it. Tolstoy didn't have a computer. Start writing. If you get the words down, once you have the whole, you sort of lay it out there, then you go back, then you fix it, then you edit it, then you improve it, then all sorts of things change, but you have the story.
That's right. Telling the story and getting your thoughts about the characters down. I had one inspirational dearest friend and cohort, and she would read my 2 or 3 chapters, and some nights I might have a glass of scotch and it was a little more fluid in one direction, and other nights I might be pent up and it was a little tight, but she suffered through the first read and kept encouraging me through the entire 90 days. Just get it on paper. You know, your characters are great. We'll fix the storyline. We'll get, you know, we'll work with editors, et cetera. And I think having someone inspiring you to get it on paper is key, especially for a first-time novelist.
Exactly. And then, of course, being a businessman, you are used to having a discipline of learning what you need to do. And that's right. You know, that's a process, too. You writing is a craft, and you somewhere along the line, you're going to improve. You find one area that you say, "I'm a little weak in this area. I'm going to get it better." It's just like in business, right?
That's right. That's right. I was fortunate as an entrepreneur. you learn this phrase called, you know, ship and fix. So you build the minimum viable product, and then you go ahead and let it rip, right? And so I had that kind of entrepreneurial spirit. In the process of doing that, though, you don't want to forget to fix it. You know, once you start shipping things and realize there's a problem. I was lucky enough to meet a consultant. Her name is Randy Pizer. She works with first-time authors at AuthorStop One. And then she introduced me to Daniel Roth, who really is an icon back in the 80s and 90s with Simon Schuster, books to movie, editing, publishing, etc. He took the time to read my book and give me a blistering page-and-a-half review, and then offered a 30-minute call, which turned into a three-hour event, which turned into, I hope, a lifelong friendship, because he ultimately collaborated with me. He's in the special acknowledgments as well. But he really did take that time to help me fix it. He didn't interfere with the story. He helped me get my feelings onto the page. And having that kind of guidance and educator involved is key.
Well, so let's lay out the story for my listeners so they know what it's about, because it is timely. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Very timely.
Yeah.
So tell us about who, you know, how you got the idea, and then how you decided to really, what I love is that you have created a character, Nicholas Ford, and you have brought him to a really lovely level that you've even made a website for him. And I like that. You're making him into a real person.
Well, I think it's fun for me because Nicholas Ford has evolved over about a 30-year group of friendships in the intelligence community. We shared a lot of stories, and I kept track of these things, kept track of these guys, and we would meet up at bars, and ultimately they said, Tony, you tell the story, you know. And so I would talk about these events going on in the 80s in Central and Latin America, you know, moving through the whole freedom fighter situation in Nicaragua, what the government was doing, what they weren't doing, what they were doing right, and in some cases what they were doing wrong, and how that impacted a lot of the young recruits into the CIA. Nicholas Ford is really a collage of me blended in with a host of other characters that I've heard about and some of which I've met. And we built an idea around the, you know, people need to relate to the character. And so this story, while it be a spy novel, and he does get recruited right out of college, Nicholas Ford does get thrown into covert operations with an alias, with a very aggressive case officer trying to launder money through the cartels out of Congress and into the freedom fighter support to fend off communism. Long story short, you can imagine that sets up Nicholas Ford at a very young age to deal with cartels, dictators, the DEA in Colombia, the Panama Exchange, you know, dictator Manuel Noriega. And a whole host of dangerous missions start to evolve, and the narrative changes, as does the government narrative, you know, in any decade. I won't reference today, but it's happening now. You'll see the decade kind of, the narrative change throughout week by week even. And that tests Nicholas Ford's morals, it tests his character, it tests his values, his relationships, his loyalty, and in some cases it tests to the extreme of which it breaks. And you'll have to read the book to see what he does to find his own way and his own sheer will. But it's a very, I'm told by critics, the last half of the book is quite the thrill ride.
It is. It definitely is. And along the way, always in the back of your mind, you're thinking, what? Where's congressional oversight of all this money that's being spent, and what are we getting for it? So I think that was part of the fun of reading the book. Now, so when you wrote the book and you had to come out with a cast of characters, and based, I'm sure, on some of the people you knew. So that's a pretty thrilling thing, isn't it, when a character comes alive?
Yeah. In my opinion, I think these characters are different from, say, a Jason Bourne set of characters, or even a 007, or a Jack Ryan. You know, it's very humanized in my book, and you get to learn more about the background of the character what motivates them, where their humanity may or may not begin or stop. And I think that's woven into the thread of Nicholas Ford's experience and his direction. And I hope that that's the beginning of really a decade or two of writing as Nicholas Ford evolves and sees other missions, as his role may change throughout the intelligence community, what he's doing next. I hope that people will enjoy this enough that they want to see what happens next.
Well, I think they will, because this is the key always. You come out with a character. And what I love is that you took him to the next level, which most authors don't. You've given him his own life, his own web page. And this is actually very clever. This comes, I think, from your world and knowing business world. You've built something here that is quite unique. I don't know many authors, you know, of course, there's a Jack Reacher has his own page because Reacher is Reacher. But most authors don't do this, and I like it. Of course, in many ways, as you said, he's based on a part of you, a farm boy. And so tell us where this background, a bit of his background, and where it relates to you. You were, of course, you are an Eagle Scout, which is a major part of your life, I'm sure. Both of my boys were Eagle Scouts at the age of 13.
Oh.
So I lived through that whole Eagle Scout years.
Congratulations on that. I grew up on a working farm, generational working farm. I was the third generation. My brother took it over. My dad ultimately passed. But we would do anything, you know, to get out of farm work back then. This is back in the 60s and 70s and early 80s. And I did go to University of Illinois. I was a college athlete in track and field. And I think that spirit of sheer will and entrepreneurialism is what I'm put into, for lack of a better word, Nicholas Ford's character. Because I knew it. I knew myself. I was in that recruitment mode at that time at the University of Illinois. I did a lot of studying about the CIA with regard to their recruitment styles back in the 80s. And they were really looking to recruit Midwestern, patriotic loyalists who weren't afraid to get their hands dirty, you know, a departure, if you will, from the Yale graduates, where most of the Ivy Leaguers were recruited early into the CIA. And I took that experience and my lifelong friendships and listened to these stories and melded it all together. You know, I watched a documentary once of Ian Fleming's writing, and I actually got the idea because he observed so many different intelligence, you know, military, special ops kinds of people. He was able to create characters that brought that characteristic and feel to life in his early book. And I wanted to replicate that. And I am a fan of book to movie. So I must tell you, I'm not only an avid reader, but I'm a huge moviegoer. And I'm hoping that this series will take hold and find its way into the medium.
Well, I think so, because you have the right attitude. I love your attitude. The website is perfection, absolute perfection, beautifully designed. And I love that you've done a real trailer, a very smart trailer. Explain, why did you, well, of course, this comes from being in business. You know, I'm also an entrepreneur. I've had many businesses over the years. And it's funny, you also have patents in, I also have industrial patents. So there's many things that connect us. And I'm a farm girl. So I know this experience, by the way, of what you're talking about, because I eventually worked for Booz Allen and Hamilton, which has its own dynamics there. So this comes from being really in business. You've approached this as a business, and I think it's brilliant.
Well, we started the website almost about a full year ago, actually, and it became a real way for me to test pilot excerpts, to test pilot trailers, to create a community of followers within my own Facebook, you know, LinkedIn, all the business and, you know, social mediums that we have. And so people were already thinking, wow, when is this going to come out? When is this going to come out? You know, back in December, January, and February, we did a lead-in and a lot of teasers. I also then hired a group called Merrill Moss Media Group, which probably contacted you guys. And I think building a team along with the tools, like a great website, a good trailer, put excerpts on, have advanced praise, get people involved in winning buy pens and advanced reader copies and all of those promotional tactics are on that website. Then bring in a professional and do the promotional plan and lay it out well. And I must say we are off to a really great start having been just released.
Well, I think it is brilliant. As I said, the word brilliant, because I have not seen anyone really grasp the opportunity to really self-promote in a big way. And you've done that. And Merrill Moss are wonderful. They are a wonderful media group. Now, did they advise you on the website, or who did that? Who came out with this idea?
Yep. You're going to laugh, but most of my patents are in the technology and technology enablement field. And so I built the original website. Then I brought in the daughter of one of my longstanding business partners, Mary Apesos, out of New York. And she took over the website and said, hey, let's turn this into more of an engagement website. And so thank God she came on board in the fall of last year and took all of my style and design and then made it come to life. And so we delivered a wonderful trailer that was produced by Lisa Toll. She's also a crime author, so she knew right away what I was trying to describe, and she did an amazing job putting a book trailer together that has gotten rave reviews on, you know, YouTube, Google, our site, social media sites, and people do respond to that trailer. So I highly recommend, you know, build that website in advance, you know, bring your characters to life a little bit, and let people know what you're doing in advance and build some anticipation.
Exactly. It is great. It is really, really great and very clever. And it's going to be, we know, you'll have to, you know, you have to write some books to have the chops so that it'll be picked up eventually for streaming video. But I'm sure it will be. It'll take you a few years. They always like to have a few books under their belt before they, you know, take you. But this is a beautiful approach. Smart, intelligent, clever. I just cannot praise you enough in how you've approached, you know, just basically coming out with a book over the pandemic years and then going with it, just running with it. So did you, how did you publish it? How did you get this published?
Yes, yeah, so Merrill Moss has several divisions in her company, and some of them are concierge services. And we had an offer from a third-party, you know, publisher. I would call them a Tier 2 publisher, probably, and we didn't want to wait. We basically said, you know, we appreciate that, but we would like to bring the first book out direct. So I self-published it, created a company called Full Bloom Press, but in the background, Merrill Moss Media Group and Merrill Moss and her partner in the publishing side is Jerry Silver. She does an amazing job. She lines it up. They have a professional editor on board for the final version of editing. They create the relationships. They help you set up all of the what I'll call back-end tracking, reporting, and banking. And it's a full-service concierge approach for new authors and or existing authors that just want to do some self-publishing. I think what attracted me to Merrill was the professionalism of it and the fact that a lot of her folks do get picked up by third-party publishers if they desire, and many of them have been successful on their own. So being an entrepreneur and being slightly impatient at times and wanting to stay in control, I went ahead and invested in my own publishing.
Well, I think you've done the right thing. You've done the right thing because it's hard to get, you know, it's to go the traditional publishing route or the third party route. It's time consuming. you wanted to hit it, and I think you've hit it out of the ballpark with this, with the method that you've used. I love it because you're building a fan base. How's that coming? How's that working for you? How do you do that?
Gosh, our media on Facebook and in Instagram reaches, you know, hundreds of thousands of touch points. We've got thousands to tens of thousands of followers now. We're at a point where we are ready to hopefully sell a significant amount of books over the next 30 to 60 to 90 days. And then we are already being asked to do book two before Christmas. So we're going to work real hard to get the editing done and get that out in the fall so that it can be promoted into Christmas. And then book number three immediately thereafter in Q1 of 2023. So I would have to say we're pleased with the following. We're pleased with our engagement and our promotional tactics.
So who's helped you with your Facebook and that kind of outreach?
So Mary Apesos, she's an independent consultant, and she's listed on our website as well, so you can find her there. But she has anywhere from half a dozen to a dozen clients at a time and has been doing it for about 10, 15 years. But she manages our social media. She manages, you know, the Instagram, the Twitter, the Facebook, you know, the website changes, all of the advance and post promotional tactics, you know, all the database email blasts, things like that.
Fantastic. Really, I am so impressed with you. The book is a great read. It's, as you said, it's especially the as we near the end, it gets more and more exciting. And I think the idea of where our government sometimes gets ideas from is also something that people will enjoy reading about and seeing what works and what definitely doesn't work.
Oh boy.
But
it's historical fiction. We got to remember it's fiction inspired by true events, but there are some crazy moments where you'll recognize tactics within this book that the government has used both 30, 40 years ago as well as last week.
Exactly. Especially last week, I think. Or maybe, and what they're doing right at this very moment.
Very well.
Well, you know, this is wonderful. During the pandemic, I was telling people, and so many people did contact me, and they started writing. Many of them got into it in the first year. Now we're talking about the first year of the pandemic. They got into NaNoWriMo, you know, writing a novel in a month for National Novel Month, and they did that, and that was wonderful because you did over 100,000 words in 90 days, and it can be done. And then once you have that, you just start fine-tuning it, hone your craft as you're going along, right?
That's right. I mean, find a good setting, pick your inspirational times of the day or night, and sit down and crank it out. And I literally wrote my book in episodic mode. So I knew from event to event on a chronology of timeline how I wanted this story to unfold and what material events we would be leading into and coming out of. And so when I was sitting down to write, I knew what I wanted to accomplish in that sitting. Whether it took me an hour and a half or 2.5 or 3 hours, I would block off that time and let it flow. And most of the time, I could get that episode in my mind, you know, on paper.
Well, you did a great job. I think you did a fantastic job. Let's repeat your website for the book is.
So you can find it at TonyRothAuthor.com or NicholasFordBooks.com. They both go to the same location, TonyRothAuthor.com. And you'll find everything there.
And I hope that you will be back here in the fall, and we'll be talking about book two, and I can compliment you some more on the brilliant approach that you have taken to publishing, self-publishing. And I think you're going to be, I think you're going to be inspiring to many people, too. Great job.
Oh, I appreciate that. And congratulations on your upcoming seventh-year anniversary.
Well, seventh anniversary is coming up next week. I can't believe it. It's been fantastic. I've talked to almost 700 authors. And I love all of you people. I just love all authors. And I'm so happy to be able to promote this book because I know it's going to be a winner and you're going to be a winner. We'll see, you know. Okay?
Thank you. And don't forget, we're live on Amazon.com.
Okay. All right. Bye-bye now. Anything else? Amazon.com and
Oh, just Amazon.com for now, and then we're going to open it up hopefully later in the year to more distribution.
Okay. Well, that's great. And we'll stay in contact again. It was a joy to talk to you today.
Oh, great. Have a great time, and thanks again for having me on the show.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Bye. Okay. We'll go to commercials, and then we'll be right back. Okay.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you ready to eliminate your home energy bill? Well, get ready to harness the sun. Go EHS, Effective Solar Solutions, by Efficient Home Services. With no upfront costs, you can save money on your utility bill and even eliminate your electric bill altogether with EHS Solar. Call EHS, the number one solar installer nationwide. We know how to customize your home. EHS handles every project in-house with no subcontractors. Remember, no upfront costs, tax breaks, and the best company in the business, Efficient Home Services. Schedule an appointment today at 727-353-3757. Visit our website and download your free buyer's guide to going solar at www.goehs.com. Go solar, go savings, go EHS. Call 727-353-3757 today to talk to our experts.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I am back. I am back with a very special guest. She was on the program before, 2 years ago, I can't believe it. And we talked at that time about her book. And I'm so happy to welcome Bernice Lerner to Joy on Paper. And hi, Bernice.
Hi, Patsy.
Well, you know, the time has gone so, it's been so crazy. Of course, you were here to talk about your book that was written so beautifully called All the Horrors of War, which was really, it follows the story of your, well, you tell us what it's the story, because yeah, I was so impressed when you came on, and the book, wow, the book is amazing. But we also want to talk about your mother, who's going to be giving a speech this week. And I wanted to bring this sort of all around back to the subject of we're facing another war. I can't believe it.
Yes. So thank you so much for inviting me to speak with you today. Yes, we spoke 2 years ago, and it was a very memorable interview for me because you were just so gracious and kind. And that was my book, All the Horrors of War, a Jewish Girl, a British Doctor, and the Liberation of Bergen-Belsen. And yes, it was a dual biography about my mom, who was Anne Frank's age and in the same place and time in Bergen-Belsen, and about the British military officer who was in charge of relief efforts at what was then the largest concentration camp. And yes, what's happening now on the news, I'm just glued to the news, and I think a lot of us are. And what's happening in Ukraine is just heartbreaking and heartrending, and it does bring back a lot for my mom and for me, a lot in terms of seeing what people are going through, what they're experiencing. And you, if you've been a refugee, if you have that experience in your family, you're almost like you're feeling the feelings, like when they talk about the bitter cold snap and what people have to do, and they have to leave their homes in a hurry, and they can barely take any of their belongings with them. And what does that mean? And I just feel their feelings, and I just, like, when I sleep in a warm bed at night, I think about them almost every minute of the day, about what it must be like to have to escape those terrible things that are happening. And there's a lot of things that are being said that are, I'm not an expert, by the way, on any political things or geopolitical dynamics, but I can tell you that from a human perspective, there's a lot of things that are going on that are sort of reminiscent of what happened in this terrible time in the past. And when people say they can't believe it's happening in the 21st century, this is happening. Well, that's what people said then during the Holocaust, what we now know was the Holocaust. They all said, we can't believe it's happening now in the 20th century, perpetrated by the most cultured nation on the continent. So there's a lot of familiar things that are just pull at your heartstrings. And yeah, and there's a lot of differences now also between now and then. So now it's incredible because you have such unity. I think that both all throughout Europe and through the West and NATO, all these countries are on board. They're all feeling that Putin is the criminal, and Russia's after its big prize, the Ukraine, the largest country in Europe, for many reasons, for Putin's imperial aspirations and for its natural resources and for practical reasons. But there are so many people who are just against government and individuals who are riled up and who are, there's a lot of compassion we see, right? There's a lot of people from Poland and Hungary and Romania, people on the borders. Poland, I think, has received over 1 million refugees so far. There's a lot of volunteers helping there with warm food for people as they cross the border, there with warm coats for them, trying to help place them, trying to find places for them, trying to help them get to relatives and friends who live in other places. So there's a lot of good people in the world who are really mobilizing to try to organize and help. And there's a lot of organizations that are collecting money and everything from toys to products that people need. And there's just a lot of goodness in the world that you see. And one of the differences between now and then, I feel, is that now we have the media. Then we didn't have journalists. Like my mother would say, like, where were people when we were like forced onto the boxcars from our hometown and deported to Auschwitz? Like everything then seems to have done under great secrecy. Now everyone sees everything in real time, practically. We have journalists on the ground. We have reports on the ground. We have people. We can see mothers and children, and the media knows how that's what people are interested in, and it's really the human story is out there. It's out there so that caring people all over the world can think about what can they do. The good people all over can try to mobilize. And, of course, they're in a war situation. There's a lot of complicating factors. But those are some of the things I think about. And I think about the importance of leadership. This is Zelensky, the president of Ukraine, is coming down. And he's going to be down in history as one of the greatest moral leaders. How he's imploring the West to help, his cries to people, his serving as an example for his own compatriots, for the people from the Ukraine, and really inspiring them to resist. What an example of strength and moral and fortitude. It's just unbelievable. And we're watching it in real time. We're hearing from him in real time, and that is made possible by technology and media. And one of the greatest hardships I'm hearing that people are suffering, among so many other things, and their whole, you know, in certain cities are being bombed and places are being destroyed, but and the electricity is down and there's no heat and there's shortages of all kinds of things that people need and food. But people also miss the internet if they can't have access to the internet. And of course, it's a problem in Russia when people can't get real honest information. So those are all the things that are running through my head, Patsy.
Yeah, there's so many things that are running through my head, too. And you're right. Now we do have press coverage, unlike in 1943 when the rabbis marched on Washington, D.C., and the press didn't want to cover it when they were begging 3 days before Yom Kippur, when all the rabbis came down on trains from all over the country to get coverage, because they knew what was happening. They already knew what was happening in the camps, and they didn't get coverage. And all of that just built up, and nobody cried out at that time. It's great that we have this coverage. It's a shame that we didn't have it years ago, you know, when Putin was taking little bits of countries at a time. It's heartbreaking that it's gone to this level. And of course, most people in America had no idea how important the Ukraine was throughout history, that it is the largest country, that it is the breadbasket, that back in 1875, they were already sending wheat to India. Nobody really paid any attention to how important this country is. How we got here, it's heartbreaking.
It is heartbreaking, and it's when things like this happen, it's like a lesson for the, you know, it becomes like this geography lesson and this, yeah, and more, because people, you're right, people aren't aware, and we just go about our lives and we just think about our immediate problems, and we're focused on what's, you know, things in our country that are wrong that we're trying to right. And it all of a sudden, it does broaden us, and we do learn about other places in the world and what's happening. And it's really hard, because I don't envy people in high up in government. It's such hard decisions that I keep thinking, like, whenever I hear, that the United States, you know, there's a lot of things to take into consideration, and Russia's a nuclear power, but I keep thinking about what could have happened 80 years ago, and it's not that long ago. For other people, it feels like it's a long, you know, it's ancient history, but for me, it's very immediate, because it would involve my family.
Yeah.
And I think of how, we can't bomb, the governments would say, the leaders, Franklin Roosevelt would say, we can't bomb the railway route to Auschwitz because our first priority is just, we just have to win the war. And the priorities of the government really sometimes,
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard to say, but, you know, when I, speaking of Roosevelt, when the rabbis came there and the rabbis had proof of what was going on and they begged him to bomb the railways, do something, and he wouldn't even see them. And it's this is the kind of thing that if we don't report on it in history, through all these years, really people don't talk about it. One of the reasons I happen to know about it, and it's part of sort of my history, is that I knew a rabbi who actually was on that march. And they ignored him. They ignored what was going on. And just like for years now, people have ignored what was going on in the Ukraine until it's almost too late because we don't know what the heck is going to happen now. It's frightening. It's really frightening. And it's wonderful that your mother is still, you know, going out there and talking about what she went through and hopefully will open eyes, you know, of the people who listen to her and people who listen to you. Tell us about this speech that she's going to be giving. You sent a newsletter out about it. Tell us about this.
Yeah, so she thankfully, she's in good health. She's 92 years old. And she is going to be giving a talk on Friday, this coming Friday, for the Arizona Jewish Historical Society. So it's they titled the talk "Taking Chances," because that's so much of what she was about. I mean, during the war, I tremble to say it because there were so many people who were taking chances who didn't make it and didn't survive. But she was this. She was just sort of this street smart 14-year-old in Auschwitz and then in a labor camp and a death march in Bergen-Belsen. And she did certain things that helped her to survive. So she's giving a talk at the Arizona Jewish Historical Society. It's on their website. It's this coming Friday. And I'm proud of her. I'm glad that she's able to do it.
Well, I think it's wonderful. Now, the story, let's go a little bit back to the book, because I've been wondering over, you know, this, as I said, it's 2 years and everything sort of blended in, and I never really got to, you know, come back to you to check if somebody has picked this up, if anybody is going to make a film out of your story. Because I think it would be fantastic. Because tell us about Brigadier Hughes. Tell us about what he did and why he was an integral part of the book, of what you wrote about.
Yeah, so I discovered him when I asked this question. Like, it occurred to me at some point, like, how did my mother actually, like, survive? What were the logistics? What were the mechanics? How did the rescuers operate in Bergen-Belsen? Because she had fallen unconscious at the end after the liberation, and there was a hole, there was a gap, and she couldn't really tell me how she got from the infested hut to a makeshift hospital room. So when I started to research the liberation of Bergen-Belsen, the most prominently associated with it is Brigadier Glenn Hughes. And so I just became curious about him and wondered about him, and I started to research him, his wife. I talked to whoever survivors were around who remembered him, friends who remembered him. I traveled to London to meet his daughter. And it turned out that he was an extraordinary character. Like, people heard of Oscar Schindler. Well, he wasn't exactly like an Oscar Schindler, but he was in that he maintained relationships with survivors for the rest of his life. And he supported them. He had a watershed experience liberating the camp that changed him forever. It did everyone of the liberators, but for him, it really affected him very deeply. And he went on to do some really important things in his life that connect back to that experience of really not being able to save so many thousands of people who died terrible deaths. So I just became very interested in him. And so I tell in the book, I basically tell the story of these two protagonists. It's a dual biography in the last year of the war as sort of a race against time rescue story. Of course, it wasn't a rescue for too many thousands of people, but in my mom's case, she survived and four of my aunts survived because the British Second Army arrived in Bergen-Belsen 3 weeks before the end of the war and just the nick of time. If they had arrived 1 or 2 days later, I wouldn't be here on the phone talking to you. She would not have made it because death was the norm.
Well, that's why this book is fascinating. I highly recommend it. It's called All the Horrors of War. And we have to learn from these things. And that's why it's a great book. You did a beautiful job. And do you have a website for it? Did you send?
Yeah, my website is just www.bernicelearner.com.
Okay, well, Bernice, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. It's always a joy to talk to you. I'm so happy that your mother is giving this speech, and I'm sure that it will be so well received. So many people don't understand how many Jewish people also there are in the Ukraine.
Yeah, there's different estimates, but I think I've heard the most about the number 200,000.
Yeah, it's around 200,000, I think, or even over that. 200. So yeah. On top of everything else that has happened to Jewish people in the world, that we have to face this again, this kind of thing. And I have
it's
no idea.
Terrible.
It's terrible. It's terrible.
It's terrible. But in whatever small way we can, even us, people who aren't in power, can do something. There's so many organizations that are collecting even money that will help.
Yes. Just be careful where you put your money because...
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Absolutely, wow. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. We have to be careful. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me.
Well, I wanted to do this today because it's something... It's just so heartbreaking, and I think it's great to know that people can stay strong like your mom has and accomplish so much. And we're so grateful to you that you're here. And again.
And we have to, and those of us who live in freedom have to be grateful and appreciative. I mean, when you listen to some of the Ukrainians, they said like a week before, 2 days before, they were just living their life as normal. They were just going about their work and their business. And we just never know. I mean,
you never know
what can be taken.
Okay. Well, Bernice, it was a joy to talk to you as always. You take care, and
you too.
Your love to your mother from all of us.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. Bye bye.
Bye bye now.
Bye bye.
Wow, her mother's 92. I have an aunt in Israel who's 92. The exact same age, went through not quite as awful as what Bernice's mother went through because she got out and then went back for a while as a undercover agent. And so that's another story in our family life. I have to one day get it. Well, I am working on getting it all done on paper because she is an absolute doll, Aunt Hannah. So she doesn't listen to the program, I don't think, anymore, but she's just a wonderful person. And so another story, another time. Wow. All of these things that are happening. But do be careful where you give your money. If you are donating money, and there's lots of places taking money, but be extra careful where you're donating, because there are people out there who are taking advantage of this tragedy. And meanwhile, I will tell you, it would be nice if people would learn from history. I've been researching a story set in 1853 about Franz Joseph, and nothing's changed, I can tell you. All of these countries have been going through this back and forth for centuries. And it would be nice if there would be civilized people. When you think of Moscow and the ballet and the and the arts and all of this, it's just like what happened in Germany. All of this, and yet there's something terrible in the world that something like this can happen. So be careful. I do know that Hadassah is a wonderful place for you to donate money, and they will be helping so many of the people who will be arriving, the refugees who will be arriving in Israel from the Ukraine, because I know many, many people will be. And if you're looking for some place to help, I know they will need it. And probably the Red Cross is also taking donations. And then they will also make sure that the money is spent well. So be careful when you are donated. Okay, next week is the 7th anniversary of Joy on Paper, and Tasha Alexander and Andrew Grant are going to be joining me, and we're going to be announcing the winners of the Patsy Award. We have five categories. It's going to be lots of fun. The awards, you know, I wasn't able to really set up a voting mechanism this year, but it is based on the comments that I've received from listeners, and also, of course, the books that I think are great. And I'm really happy that they will be here so that we can announce the winners. And, you know, I want again to say about Tony Roth, this man is clever. He's an author who, during the pandemic, decided to sit down and write. And in 90 days, he wrote a book. And, you know, he's gone through all that other things that we talked about, editing and fine-tuning. But it shows you that you can do it if you want to do it, if you're determined. And as Mary Higgins Clark always told me, boy, oh, boy, she got up at 5 o'clock in the morning and she started writing. Of course, she was a widow at the time, and she had young children she had to feed. And another author who did the same thing, Denise Grover Swank, also became a widow and sat down and decided to write. And now she's sold over, 3 million books, something like that, the last time I talked to her. And it's all in determination, like Carol J. Perry. She gets up every morning and sets a deadline. And Rita Moreau, who does our book buzzes, they are dedicated to their task of really getting out there and writing and creating. And at the same time, they're having fun. That's a wonderful thing about being a writer. Just like Eugenia Lovett West was on the program 2 weeks ago for her 99th birthday. Writing is a joy. Because remember, you know, people, what I always tell you, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book. Or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel. You never know, and you won't unless you start writing. So get out there and start writing today. And meanwhile, say something nice to somebody, and I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed. Thank you for everything. Everybody, have a wonderful day. And be careful out there. Bye-bye now.
WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF Dade City
FM 102.3
WZHR Zephyr Hills
FM 104.3
Listen.
This is Canada Calling, the news from home for vacationing Canadians, on air and streaming online. This is Pryor Smith speaking from Toronto. It's good to have you with us. Canada Calling, a presentation of Publix, where shopping is a pleasure. In the weather department, you never know what to expect in the month of March. Item, we get a hint of spring with daytime highs in the low 60s Fahrenheit on Sunday here in southern and eastern Ontario. Yesterday, a mix of rain, freezing rain, ice pellets, and then snow. That system has passed through New Brunswick and is now tracking to Newfoundland. Just when you think we're gradually working our way out of winter, we get a day like yesterday, Oh, well, another 4 or 5 weeks from now, and this will all be but a bad memory. Meantime, spring flowers are popping up all over the place in Vancouver and Victoria. Prime Minister Trudeau was in London yesterday for meetings with the British and Dutch prime ministers, discussing the ongoing international response to the Russian invasion of Ukraine. He took a side trip to meet with the Queen at Windsor Castle, her first official in-person event since she recovered from a bout with COVID. After his meeting with the British and Dutch prime ministers, Trudeau unveiled more sanctions designed to help suffocate the Russian economy. This time, the federal government's targeting 10 businessmen in Vladimir Putin's inner circle, working from a list supplied to Ottawa by jailed Russian opposition leader Alexei Navalny. In addition to humanitarian aid for Ukraine, Canada's been busy providing military equipment in recent days, including anti-tank weapons, rocket launchers, and grenades, not to mention about 1.8 million rounds of ammunition. Over the next few days, the Prime Minister is going to be visiting Canadian troops that have been deployed to Latvia, and he'll have stops in Germany and Poland. And now this message. If you or a loved one experience an unexpected hospital stay while you're on vacation, and if you need an air ambulance flight home, call AirCare One. Here's the founder and president of AirCare One, Denise Way.
We can transport our Canadian winter visitors quickly and safely back to Canada in our airborne ICU Learjet aircraft. AirCare One has the most experienced flight and medical teams in the industry. So call 855-955-5133 or visit takemebacktocanada.com.
While Prime Minister Trudeau was doing his thing in London, in Montreal, convenience store giant Couche-Tard was announcing it's suspending operations in Russia, where it has some 380 employees in 38 stores operating under the global brand Circle K. The company has more than 14,000 stores worldwide, so it's a small move in the overall scheme of things. The company says since the invasion of Ukraine began, its teams in Poland and the Baltic states have been providing support for refugees with free food, fuel, and housing, along with donations to children's charities. In other news, every now and again, the CBC comes up with an investigative report that just leaves you scratching your head. The latest? The network reports that the exclusive Georgian Peaks ski resort near Collingwood, Ontario, a resort that charges a $43,000 initiation fee, has just opened a state-of-the-art multi-million dollar lodge and had a $1.5 million budget surplus this year, received almost $1.4 million in COVID relief payments from the federal government. The club's board president claims they abide by all rules of government programs. Continuing a 67-year broadcast tradition, this is Canada Calling.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, inventor of MyPillow, here to tell you about my Giza Dream bedsheet. I started with the world's finest cotton called Giza. The long staple cotton makes my Giza Dream sheets ultra soft and durable. They come with my 60-day money-back guarantee and a 10-year warranty.
Order online at MyPillow.com, promo code Bill. That's promo code B-I-L-L. Again, that's MyPillow.com, promo code Bill. Proud sponsor of Only in America with Bill Cochran, Tuesdays from 6 to 7 p.m. here on the Tan Talk Radio Network.
And now Canada Calling continues. The prime subject of discussion these days here in Canada, aside from the carnage and brutality in Ukraine, is gasoline and home heating oil prices, the highest we've ever seen, and constantly going up. Alberta's Premier Jason Kenney is doing something about it. He says his government will stop collecting its fuel tax of 13 cents a liter, and is going to offer an electricity rebate in an effort to help Albertans struggling with the rising costs. He says the gas tax will not be collected as long as the cost of West Texas Intermediate oil remains above $90 U.S. By the way, the price of gas in Alberta went above $1.50 a liter over the weekend in both Edmonton and Calgary. It's over $2 a liter in British Columbia and around $1.85 here in Ontario. Over the past couple of years, we've constantly heard stories of nurses here in Ontario feeling the strain of the pandemic. Many have simply quit their jobs. Well, the Ford government has come up with a $763 million incentive program to encourage nurses to keep working. Incentive pay up to $5,000 per person. Nurses must be employed as of the end of this month to get a first payment, and then be employed by September 1st to get the second. At the Toronto Stock Exchange yesterday, the index down 98 at 21,304. And the buck this morning, down about a third of a cent, 78 cents U.S. And finally, one of the high-profile organizers of the truckers' convoy and blockade of downtown Ottawa was a woman from Medicine Hat, Alberta, named Tamara Leach. Up until the time the trucks started rolling, virtually nobody in Canada had ever heard of her. Well, we've heard a lot from her and about her since. She was arrested in Ottawa on February 17th and denied bail twice. She was back in court again yesterday. This time, she was granted bail on $25,000 bond. She was ordered to leave Ottawa within 24 hours and told to be out of Ontario within 72 hours. This is Canada Calling, an online...